This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 9th of March, 2022. Market's trying to piece together a rally yesterday and not really succeeding. I'm not sure what the approximate headline was, if there was one that took the market back lower, but we did see a new low close yesterday in the U.S. Before, for whatever reason, rallying or trying to rally back again a little bit this morning. There was quite a bit of volatility in Asia, especially in mainland Chinese stocks, I noticed. A lot of that move erased. So if you just look at the headline of where the session ended, it may not be impressive, but intraday it was down quite a bit. But I'm scratching my head a little bit here, Peter, looking at some of the internals here that you can see in our theme baskets, the different baskets we've put together along different trading themes. The mega caps, basically being the broader market, down slightly on the day, but some pretty wide and divergent moves there. Is there any information value in this, or do you think it's still a bit of noise?
There is a lot of noise in the market. And before we talk about the theme baskets, it's important to note in China that a lot of some of the sentiment was around the technology companies, of course, given what's taking place in China. But then the second thing was that Norway's sovereign wealth funds, they also said that they're going to exit their position in Lianyang, which is one of the largest sports retailers in China, because they are worried that maybe the company is violating some human rights issues. So a broader discussion in the investment community, to what extent the developed markets, institutional investors are maybe considering cutting back on their Chinese exposures. That's part of the reasons for why the Chinese session was so volatile. But yes, looking at the internals, so the big standout move yesterday was, of course, the green transformation. It was up almost 5%. It came on the back on that joint bond statement from the EU that they're looking at issuing a lot of joint bonds to fund massive investments in energy and defense. And I think the defense industry, which was down yesterday, a lot of the potential upside and extra stimulus coming towards an industry, a lot of it has all been discounted. So I think that's just, we're in a little bit of a pause mode here in that industry, and the green transformation took the baton and just rallied 5%. And it makes sense, because part of the solution, of course, is renewable energy. It's not the total solution, but it's part of the solution to get off some of that oil and gas from Russia.
Yeah, and you see that, I mean, if you look at the year-to-date column on the baskets, you can see that defense one is the only one that's properly up on the year, 9.9% up in what has not exactly been a very good market this year. Joint debt issuance, we were trying to cover it live because it was a story that was breaking live during the podcast yesterday. Really interesting to see how this shapes up, and also the degree to which this is mutually issued debt. There seems to be some back and forth on that, something quote-unquote new tools potentially required to get this issued directly by the EU Commission. So it's certainly something to watch out for. It is a boost to the euro. I'll be talking a little bit more about that later in the podcast. But let's get on to some other things you're pulling out here, Peter. One of these hedge areas you've talked about in a chaotic market environment, that being the market makers, and you've got some perspective there.
Yeah, I want to follow on it, because now we've had pretty chaotic markets, to say the least, across a lot of asset classes. And flow traders and Virtue are pretty big publicly listed market makers, and we are waiting for maybe Citadel to go public as well, given that they took a big capital injection from Sequoia Capital recently. And I just wanted to pull out the relative performance for Virtue versus the S&P 500. That's the dark blue line there. So effectively, Virtue have been a pretty good one-for-one hedge against S&P 500. And during the trading days following the start of the invasion, which happened on the 24th of February, you can see that on chart, you actually had an outperformance. So during that tail risk event, you actually got a pretty significant hedging capabilities for Virtue. And then flow traders have outperformed the European stock market by 20%, showing, I would argue that market makers are a good hedging instruments to consider if you're not willing to pay a lot of premium for options, or you want to pay the roll yield for a VIX, a long VIX position. So it's worth considering, and we have written a lot about that in previous pieces, which you can find on the home.saxo.
Yeah, and we have also the global risk indicator. Just wanted to update that briefly. It's on slide 4. Showing very low levels, and we're sustaining very low levels, which is pretty remarkable and unusual. Just to reemphasize that this is a very dangerous environment. Some of the inputs there are potentially a little bit beyond what they should be, because one of them, for example, is the spreads in emerging market debt. And there's a Russia component to that, which of course is completely exploded. So there is, of course, stress in the EM credit, but perhaps not as broad as the overall indicator might suggest. And then just to, as a reminder, we have this flattening yield curve. Talked a lot about that, but just for perspective, ahead of next week's FOMC meeting, we have two-year yields punching up at the highs for the cycle. The Fed has no option but to hike rates and to continue to do so, and may even just simply, as in the 70s, we talk about this as the first Fed that has been given the political mandate to tighten policy no matter what because of inflation, and is forced to maybe even continue policy that will encourage a recession as the only way towards demand destruction. So we see the two-year yield at those highs. There was a weak three-year auction yesterday in the U.S. We have a 10-year auction up tonight. The longer end of the U.S. yield curve still some ways off from those cycle highs. As you can see on slide 5, we're at around 185 basis points versus the 200-plus basis point highs for the cycle. Again, we're heading towards an inversion potentially right around the time frame of the first Fed rate hike. I actually don't really want to cover FX because I don't think it's terribly interesting. We are seeing a resilient euro. I just want to emphasize, though, we do see the FX board on slide 6, the various trend strength indicators there. We're seeing the euro beginning to change around in momentum terms. You see Euro Swiss picking up decently from those lows towards parity and even slightly below. I think this fiscal stimulus is a euro positive, and it'll become doubly so in the hopeful event we get on the other side of the open hostilities and the impact on, especially the divergent impact on energy and power prices into Europe. But it's interesting to watch at this parity level, it shapes up as some sort of cycle low. And then just emphasizing where we are with the precious metals on that chart, something like gold showing a trending reading of 11. This is not something you normally see with these readings. But we need to get to commodities over because we have a total chaos in some cases. Yeah, yesterday, the conversation was around nickel, which absolutely exploded in price to such a degree that they had to shut down the market and even rip up the whole day's trading. So what's the update there? How do they sort through this and get things back online?
Well, that's a good question, John. The answer so far has been that the LME has basically, first of all, yesterday, we had that massive surge to $100,000 a ton. There was a 250% increase just in 2 days. The exchange stepped in. They canceled all trades done yesterday. So right now we have a market that is not trading, potentially not opening until Friday, until they sort out the mess and get some of the shorts brought down. There are reports that basically a massive short was held by the Chinese nickel giant Xinjiang, which according to the Wall Street Journal could be facing a loss of up towards $8 billion trading loss. And it just highlights this, how these broken supply chains has caused a ripple across the commodity market. And as I mentioned yesterday, this is not small traders just trying to have a punt on the market. These are basically producers and users of these metals. Potentially some have been hedging their holdings. They have been hedging forward production. But by doing that, they're left with a financial risk, i.e. the future in the futures market. That requires a daily margin payment. And with the spikes we're seeing right now, these margin payments for some companies has just simply reached levels which are very tough to bear. We saw that earlier in the week, not something that's having a detrimental impact, but just Peabody Energy in the US as an example, a major coal producer, they suddenly end up with a margin call for $500 million because they've been hedging some of their production. So this is the stage we're in right now, where supply shortages and margin calls are potentially laying the foundation for some financial risks in the system. So it's one we need to keep a very careful eye on. Moving on to the energy space, you mentioned gold before, John. It's getting close to the record highs from 2020. We think it will hit that level eventually. But looking at the oil market, yesterday's news was the expected announcement from the U.S. that they will ban imports on Russia. This has given Biden quite a nice excuse to blame the Russians, not them, anything else for the high gasoline prices we're currently seeing. I put in the on slide 7 just an indication of where Russia is exporting all their oil and gas to. And as we can see, still Europe is caught in the middle of it. So Europe is really just that taking the biggest beating here over the coming months from these dislocations. In terms of where oil can come from, there's a conference right now in Houston, which is a big annual gathering of CEOs from all the major producers and institutions involved in the oil business. And one of the CEOs from one of the big shale oil companies yesterday basically said, well, we can't just ramp up production at this moment in time. We are basically missing fracking crews, we're missing sand, we're missing labor, and all these are basically hindering them from increasing production at this stage. So high prices are here to stay until we get to the level where we are seeing demand destruction. And that I think we are seeing that already starting to unfold. It's getting a bit of a long spiel, but just to indicate where the pain is felt the hardest right now, especially in Europe, and with that also around the world, in terms of the qualities that they are in short demand. Diesel and jet fuel are really seeing some significant rallies right now. Both of these are priced based on the ICE low sulfur gas oil contract trading on ICE here in London. And as you can see on the chart here, it's basically doubled in price within the last couple of weeks. That's having a major impact on diesel price at pump, and jet fuel price are surging at a time where airlines are just about trying to recover from the pandemic. And we can see the airline index that I put here on the right, how we're seeing that sector once again under pressure. But keep an eye on that ICE gas oil contract. That's really where all the pain is being reflected right now.
All right. So as we're looking close to the cycle lows, and we talked about some major support levels that were poked below in Europe, we still have individual stories to track here. In equities, one of them you mentioned this morning on the internal meeting, Peter, was Adidas, Americans say Adidas. Take us through what the focus is there and where you're looking in terms of the individual earnings, which there are a couple of names worth tracking here.
Yeah, so we have Adidas reporting earnings here in the early European session. And as you can see, I've highlighted that on slide 10 here with the headline. So Adidas is seeing sales growth with constant currency at 11 to 13% versus 9.5% expected. And that includes a 250 million euro revenue risk related to Russia. So pretty strong outlook on the top line growth. Could have been a little bit better on the operating margin side of things. So that, you know, given that the growth margin is pretty much in line with estimates, but the operating margin is below, suggests that there is a significant wage pressures and other types of pressures on the company besides, you know, the ones that are variable to, you know, just producing the clothes and shoes, etc. And in the US session, we'll be watching CrowdStrike. Cybersecurity basket has been one of the best performing themes this year. A lot of investments, a lot of attention is going into this because, you know, you have physical warfare in Ukraine, but you definitely also have a digital warfare, and it's something that is always ongoing, but it has exploded according to a lot of different indicators that the number of cybersecurity attacks around the world have ramped up in recent weeks. So and CrowdStrike is one of the more modern players in the industry with a different approach than the older, more established players. And CrowdStrike has been a very popular stock among retail investors, including our own clients here at Saxo. So that's definitely a company we're going to watch today.
All right, and then we have a few items on the macro calendar on slide 11. If you want to see the list, a couple of those interesting as we look at central banks in Central and Eastern Europe. Yesterday, that boost to the euro from this announcement of a potential joint debt issuance is seen as a positive for the EU economy. And we're seeing that amplified into CEE currencies, which were up across the board yesterday pretty sharply. So after their recent weakness to, in some case, record levels or record weakness, if you look at the zloty, the Polish zloty, hitting 5 for the first time, essentially, since the redenomination back in the 1990s. But specific to the zloty, we had the National Bank of Poland out hiking rates more than expected by 75 basis points rather than the 50 expected. It takes the rate to 3.5%. and they're backing it, the hike up with indication they're ready to intervene in the market to prevent Zloty weakness. So that's getting to be a pretty strong message there. We'll have a press conference from Governor Glapinski today from Poland. Hungary making similar moves. They don't have much credibility on the intervention front, but their rate is the highest at above 5% now. But some of the data we'll be looking at this week is already getting a little bit stale. It's really the forward-looking stuff, the most forward-looking stuff that we should be interested in. And on cue, we have this Friday, the preliminary March University of Michigan Sentiment Survey. Really curious to see what the impact is on the survey from events unfolding since these happened. The impact began, of course, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine that happened in the last days of February. So we should get a full sense of to what degree this is cratering sentiment. And I think we are going to be rushing towards a recession very soon. The question being the time scale and the depth of that. As noted, we have a 10-year auction up tonight out of the US as well. Worth watching, of course, yields, but I think these are secondary to what's going on elsewhere, especially in commodities. So always keep that oil price on your screen as a factor here, certainly. Okay, that is a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.